Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's April the 26th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. He's in Bloomington, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the FDA plans to test imported pet food and livestock feed ingredients. And USDA delivers two titles from its draft of the next farm bill. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Would you like to TiVo our agricultural broadcasts? You can do so with AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts. Listen to all our shows at your...
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat at 507, a settlement price up 0.75 cents this afternoon. July futures up a half at 521, and September wheat at 527 3/4, up 1/4. May corn futures $3.64 3/4, down 6.5 cents. July off 6.5 at 375 1/4. In December contract at $3.74, they were off 5.5 cents for the day. May soybean futures down 3.25, 718 1/4, the settlement price there. July at 735, down 2 3/4. And the November beans at 762 1/4 were off 2 1/4 for the new crop. May bean meal futures at $193.70 a ton, down or rather up $1.10. And May bean oil 51 lower at $32.19. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, nearby April feeder cattle, $106.80. They're down a nickel for the afternoon. April live cattle at $96.55, down 40 cents. And the June futures down 62.5 at $92.70. May lean hog futures down $1.15 at $75.75 a hundredweight. From the outside markets, June crude oil futures $65.03 a barrel, now down 81 cents. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average is trading at 13,123, and it's up just about 33 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Dan Zwicker stepped away from his office and his desk. Did you find him yet, Dale?
No, I think he fled the world after all the volatility today. And maybe this week, I don't know.
It could be. So what have you guys been talking about among each other there at AgriVisor? How many analysts do you have actually on staff, by the
Three.
Way? Three. And so what's the discussion been like this week?
A lot of the discussion this week is really focused around what's going on with planting progress, whether what the implications of all this are, what the picture kind of looks like ahead, and trying to come to grips with is this thing going to start to gather some momentum, because it really is still maybe just a wee bit early for the trade to get too anxious about this. But you know, if we are talking this time again next week, everybody's probably going to be getting plenty excited if the numbers are still looking pretty dismal on corn planting.
Are you in agreement on what it all means, or do the three of you have differing opinions?
Oh, I think we all pretty much agree what the implications of it are. It's just a matter of trying to deal with the timing of this and when it's going to hit the market and those kinds of things. And you know, that's always really difficult to try to figure out when the trade itself is going to start reaching maximum anxiety.
So what happens? Have you talked about, had a discussion about what the numbers might look like on Monday at this point and what the different variations could mean to the marketplace?
Well, I don't know that we've really talked so much about numbers themselves. You know, what I've looked at, you know, I'm thinking this coming Monday, that, you know, we're going to see a corn planting number that's 20%. 25%, something in that range. It's really difficult at this point to really try to feel your way through this, because you know these are all subjective numbers here. People looking out the window as they're driving down the road. So when you get into that, you have to acknowledge that along the way in there, you can have some error in terms of what the number reported is. So, you know, last week's number at 11%, maybe it was really 15. You know, so you got these kinds of things to deal with. But, you know, with this week's weather, and depending on how the weather holds up next week, you know, you may be talking about at the end of first week of May, we're going to have a planting progress number that's old 45%, something like that, and the average of the last 5 years has been 66%. In the last 3 years, we've been 70, 79, and 84%, so we're off to a slow start.
But given that, there are years where we've gotten off to a slow start, relatively speaking, with cold and wet weather.
There are, but about the only year you can really come up with that we really had a slow early planting and we ended up having really good yields was back in 1979, mostly when you start to see some delay that you really start to cap out what kind of yield potential you're going to be dealing with. So I think that's the big thing, and everybody's trying to feel their way through, okay, this planting progress, what's it mean, and what kind of implications does it have for what we may be going to see as far as yields. And you really can't start taking bushels off, but what you start to do is that you're starting to say, if we're going to be late, the odds of reaching trend yields start to tilt a little bit against it.
And when do you consider late?
Well, I think if you're sitting there at a 50% mark as of the end of the first week of May, if we're something around that or less, I think that says we're behind. You know, and I know you and I talked just privately early in the week about something here in the state of Illinois. It's what, April 27th is the best planting date, and after that you tend to start losing yield. And the state of Iowa is just a couple of days later, somebody told me. So, you know, you're really starting to push a lot of your planting into a later date. You've got soils that are going to be wet and a little waterlogged, and like the last 3 years where soil conditions have been really good, so you're going to end up there with having probably a little bit less germination percentage and other problems that comes along with working with wet soils, too.
Yeah, and the conversation you and I had surrounded equipment and numbers of people and not only planters, but the preparation equipment that might be available. So there are all kinds of things. I think our discussion centered on, to begin with, people versus equipment. So and that was your side of the debate. There was the planters are big, but there are but we used to have a lot more farmers.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it was interesting. I looked at an exercise of numbers of acres planted on each given week historically, and I've got database that goes back into the mid 70s, and actually, the most acres we'd ever planted on the data was back in, 1992. We had actually 1 week, 34 million acres. Typically, the max before that, we'd had some in the early 80s where we did 26, 27 million acres. Since the mid-90s now, the most we've ever planted on any given week has been 23, 24 million acres.
Then the question is whether they can top that this year and whether they have the equipment to do it. I don't know that there's much debate about them having the planters and the size to be able to pull that off. I suppose it surrounds how many acres of no-till there is, and then the rest of it, whether they have field prep equipment that's big enough to keep ahead of those planters.
And given the kind of moisture we have now in Illinois and Iowa, and here we are, zooming right in on the last day of April, do we have field conditions that's going to allow fast planting? You know, that's going to be the other thing we're going to deal with. Cause,
maybe not in no-till.
You know, it's you just got this wet soil environment. You know, here in Illinois, people may not realize there's some places in central, north central Iowa that here this week so far have gotten over 7 inches of rain. And that land up there where that is not terribly well drained, so some of that's going to have a tendency to stay wet. And I think you know, when you start factoring this in with the rainfall we've had this week, and you're two big states, and it's already been wet. Once you get over into Indiana and Ohio, wetter than here anyway. We just are setting up a situation where planting may proceed okay, just not great, and it starts to give you some negative biases as far as what kind of yield potential you can see.
I suppose the best we can say, and this is your decision, not mine, is that there's a lot of indecision about the marketplace at this point.
There's a ton, and that's to be expected. You know, I mean, yesterday the big run we had was basically because we kicked up over some technical numbers, and you know, you brought some spec fund buying back into the fray here again. And midday today, some of the forecasts for next week dried up a little bit, and then you had to floor kind of sell the thing off a little bit. That kicked some of those positions out, but still we from a technical perspective didn't end up closing that bad when you look at what's going on the July contract. So the real question is, who's going to be comfortable going home short tomorrow?
It'll be fun to watch, Dale.
Oh, yeah.
We appreciate you being with us.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Dale Latz is with the FBFM here in the University of Illinois. I talked to him earlier today, or at least did an interview with him. And this was Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, filling in this afternoon for Dan Zwicker. Of course, it's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast for the afternoon. AM 580's own Ed Keezer says there is a tornado watch in effect for much of northern and eastern Indiana, that until 10 o'clock this evening. A flood watch in effect for portions of northwestern and west central Illinois through this afternoon, and for portions of northeastern Illinois and far northwestern Indiana through this evening. Tonight, Ed says, in Illinois, cloudy skies, scattered showers in Indiana, cloudy scattered thunderstorms during the evening hours, and showers overnight. Lows will range from 40 in northwestern Illinois to 55 in southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers, primarily in eastern Illinois and across Indiana. Highs ranging from 55 near Lake Michigan to 67 in the south.
In agricultural news, the Food and Drug Administration says it will begin testing batches of 6 imported ingredients used in pet foods and livestock feed, as well as additives to human food, due to concerns that a wide variety of Chinese vegetable protein products may be contaminated with the harmful compound melamine. Officials have not found the substance in food products for people, but detected it in 2 imported ingredients widely used in pet food, wheat gluten and rice protein. The agency says that imported corn gluten, cornmeal, soy protein, and rice bran will also be tested. The vegetable proteins are used in bread, pizza, baby foods, and many vegetarian dishes. Yesterday, USDA sent 2 titles of its draft farm bill up to Capitol Hill. Agriculture Secretary Mike Johanns says the credit title has new programs to help beginning and disadvantaged producers.
We propose changing the rules on our loan program so we can help more beginning farmers buy land and obtain operating loans. We would cut the interest rate literally in half, defer the first payment for a year, increase the maximum loan value, and increase the size of both the direct ownership and the direct operating loans. We had also helped beginning and minority farmers buy their first spread by giving them first priority for all direct farm ownership loans.
Johanns says the USDA's conservation title calls for $7.8 billion in new funding and a restructuring of programs.
The language reflects our belief that the Conservation Reserve Program should continue to be the cornerstone of our conservation efforts. The Conservation Security Program is strengthened, and we infuse an additional $500 million in CSP to expand the number of acres enrolled from 15 million acres to 96 million acres over the next 10 years. We also expand the Wetlands Reserve Program, raising the enrollment cap from 2.3 million acres to 3.5 million acres. We would consolidate several existing programs into a newly designed and expanded Environmental Quality Incentives Program, or we call it EQIP, and increase funding for that by $4.25 billion.
Johans says the balance of USDA's version of the Farm Bill will be in lawmakers' hands in a matter of days. Industry experts say Europe's biofuels industry is unlikely to meet mandated targets for blending renewable fuels. One estimate puts the amount of grain required to make the goal at more than double the surplus now produced. In early March, the EU said it would require all gasoline and diesel fuel sold in member states to contain at least 10% renewable fuels by 2020, a level that was raised from its existing target of 5.7% by 2010. In 2005, the proportion of biofuels in fuel was just 1% in the EU. And a group of sweetener users, public interest, consumer, and taxpayer groups have formed the Sugar Policy Alliance. The alliance's goal is to convince Congress to change U.S. sugar policy. Critics of the current program say the policy distorts global markets. They also say U.S. sugar policy needs to be more market-oriented, less reliant on government regulation of supply, and more compliant with the nation's foreign trade obligations. Sugar policy supporters say current policy is working and note that sugar producer prices are down nearly 30% since 1996. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says the gross receipts tax is a bit like a pyramid scheme.
The concept of a gross receipt tax is deceptively simple. A GRT is a tax on all income received by a business without any deductions for cost of doing business. Accordingly, the gross receipts tax are based on the ability to pay, but are owed whether or not a business is profitable. The production process provides the best example of how a GRP pyramids. In a production process that involves six steps from the procurement of raw materials to the final sale to the consumer, if each step were performed by a separate legal entity in a state with a gross receipts tax, the final product would be subjected to six levels of gross receipts tax. Here's a simple example of how pyramiding works. First, the basic industry sells $100 worth of raw materials to a manufacturer. A $1 tax, assume a statutory 1% rate based on gross receipts tax. The manufacturer adds value and sells $200 worth of product to an integrator. That's a $2 tax. An integrator adds value and sells $250 worth of product to a wholesaler, a $2.50 tax. A wholesaler adds value and sells $300 worth of product to a retailer, adding to a $3 tax. And finally, the retailer adds value and sells $400 worth of product to the consumer, a $4 tax. In this example, $12.50 in tax was paid on a single product that was sold to the final consumer for $400. Thus, the effective tax rate as applied to the actual good was 3.125%, or more than 300% higher than the 1% statutory rate. This example excludes pyramiding resulting from the sales tax also being imposed on many of these transactions, resulting in a tax on tax. According to a Washington State study of their gross receipts tax, the business and occupation gross receipts tax pyramids an average of 2.5 times and can be as high as 5 or 6 times. Good tax policy dictates that taxes should not affect the competitiveness of businesses. However, a gross receipts tax does just that as resulting of pyramiding. A gross receipts tax will make Illinois goods and services more costly as a result of pyramiding and would create an in-state slash out-of-state cost differential that will directly affect business purchasing decisions. A gross receipts tax would give Illinois retailers and manufacturers an economic incentive to purchase less costly goods from out-of-state suppliers. A GRT would also place Illinois businesses that export product at a competitive disadvantage by increasing the cost of goods produced in Illinois. If the added costs of the GRT are not passed on to consumers, Illinois businesses will be less profitable, and Illinois will become a less desirable place to do business compared to other states. A gross receipts tax will make Illinois products more expensive for Illinois consumers. The GRT operates as a stealth tax or hidden tax, since the effect of pyramiding is to tax each level of production, unlike the sales tax, which exempts goods purchased for resale, thus raising the cost of goods sold at each production level and ultimately raising the retail selling price of the product. Additional pyramiding is caused for consumers by the imposition of the Illinois sales tax on the increased product price. Consumers will also experience an increase in the price of services. Unlike the Illinois sales tax, which does not apply to services, just the sale of tangible goods, all Illinois service providers will owe a gross receipts tax on gross income earned for their services, some or all of which will be passed on to consumers in the form of increased prices. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
On this Thursday afternoon, Bill Mayer, Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I went back. I was taking a look at some of the numbers for tillage in the state of Illinois because I knew they had topped no-till last year pretty heavily, and about a third of all acres, not just corn acres, but all acres in the state are no-till in corn, soybeans, wheat, and the rest of the acreage. But if you look at just for soybeans, and I didn't have the number for corn, soybeans is up around 51%. So maybe not as many no-till acres there out there as certainly there are soybeans at this point, but still a lot of acres, and they're still awful wet, I think, at this time. In Lexington, the McLean County area, how things going?
Well, we had a real good run there, you know, over the weekend. I would say 50% done to two-thirds, you know, would catch a lot of the farmers. You know, there's some done. There's some that haven't got going very fast. But, you know, that's the majority in that, you know, half done to two-thirds done, I'd say. 2 to 3 days, you know, would have gotten a lot of them finished up. We've had anywhere, depending on the area you're looking at around here, an inch and a half to probably close to 4 inches now. It's still raining here this afternoon a little bit. So, you know, they could, I suppose, be back in if we didn't get any more rain by maybe Sunday or Monday.
If they don't get any more rain, and I you know, I don't know what the likelihood that is at this point. It looks like there might be a few showers left across the two-state region in the next 24 hours or so. We'll try to check in more on that with Pete Levitt in a few moments. When you look at the way the market traded this week, was there anything to this point that really stepped out at you?
No, I think we've seen bases get a little bit better this week, mainly because we've got the farmers focused on other things besides moving grain, and also some of the, you know, some, we still have some elevators out here that also act as fertilizer chemical dealers, and they get pretty wrapped up in just doing that. That's not as much as it used to be, but I think, we've seen a slowdown in the movement, and we've seen some improvement in the bases. There's some talk here about some Illinois River locations may have to stop loading next week, which probably ain't going to be a big deal because they haven't been real aggressively loading anyhow, so volatility, I guess, is a key word. I think Dale hit on that a little bit. We used to think an 18-cent range on a daily basis was a big move, but it seems pretty common nowadays.
It does indeed. What are your cash bids for the day?
Cash corn, 346, beans, 683.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks.
Bill Mayer, Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt will join us. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. State lawmakers are continuing to tinker with electric rate legislation, despite complaints about ongoing political gamesmanship. Today, a House committee put ComEd back on a measure that would roll back rates and freeze them for a year. The Senate has already approved a freeze for Ameren customers, but Senate leadership used a rare parliamentary maneuver last week to drop ComEd from that bill. House leadership contends a rate freeze should apply statewide. Senate President Emil Jones says a freeze would create financial disaster. The measure heads to the full House, where it could be voted on as early as tomorrow. Illinois House members could put a statewide smoking ban on the governor's desk before the week is out. Supporters think they have the votes to pass a bill to stop smoking in bars and restaurants. The state Senate has already passed the bill. The owners of those establishments say the ban would hurt their business. A central Illinois man has been convicted on 5 counts of child pornography. Jeff Shoemaker of Gridley was found guilty after a 2-day bench trial. Shoemaker was arrested after Walmart employees developed a roll of film depicting nude boys and called police. The 52-year-old told authorities the photos were taken during his son's birthday party. He denied that he meant to take sexually explicit pictures. Shoemaker faces 4 to 15 years in prison when he's sentenced. He ran the gift shop at the Children's Discovery Museum in Normal until his arrest last June. Indiana State Police say 8 people have been killed, 2 others were injured in an accident on the Indiana Toll Road near the town of Bristol. That's east of South Bend. A tractor-trailer plowed into a line of traffic that had slowed down to a standstill for a construction project. Indiana lawmakers have reached a tentative deal on a bill that requires coroners to receive training and outlines ways to determine the identity of a dead person. The House-Senate compromise comes a year after a highway crash that killed 5 people and drew national attention after the misidentification of 2 Taylor University students, one dead, one alive. Under the bill, coroners would have to determine the identity of a dead person by 1 of 4 methods, fingerprints, DNA analysis, dental records, or positive ID by an immediate family member. Indiana's 92 county coroners are elected, and training is currently optional. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us on a Thursday afternoon to tell us how soon we'll dry out in the Midwest. Hi, Pete.
Yeah, hi, Todd. Well, despite the fact that you've got this heavy rain system moving right through Champaign County, I think as we speak, and headed on eastward into northwest Indiana, despite this last remnant of a large area of showers that we've been experiencing the last few days, this system is eventually going to shift itself on eastward late today, tonight, and tomorrow. There may be one more bout of showers sometime late tonight, and then it looks like great weather right through the weekend and into the middle of next week. Temperatures getting to above normal levels, up into the 70s, probably even hitting the 80s briefly on Monday, maybe again on Tuesday. So we're looking for 5 or 6 days of very good weather, and that should be good news for these farmers anxious to get some wheels turning after this prolonged wet spell. Now, that period of dry weather is not scheduled to last forever. It's going to be now or never on getting stuff in, because we see some more activity coming along the following weekend. First in the western Corn Belt. They've got a few more days toward the end of the week in the eastern Corn Belt. That's next week. The western Corn Belt should see some showers starting to work back in there toward the end of next week and over the weekend, and then back into the eastern Corn Belt again. So what we're saying is that we're getting a respite in this wet pattern for a while, but it's only temporary as the pattern goes through a brief one-week shuffle, and then we don't see anything in the distant future that says we're really going into a drier weather pattern. We look like we'll be seeing showers again the following week.
And if you could just recap for us very quickly, it seems to me that the western Corn Belt has been the wetter portion of the belt in this last run, and they're likely to get dumped on again, eh?
Yeah, they will again, though they'll get about 4 or 5 days of dry weather. But those are heavy soils, Todd, and it doesn't dry out too well in that north-central area where they just got so wet. And so it's going to take a while, and the real problem you have is that the fields that drain well will get done, but the fields that don't drain well just never get time to catch up, and so they just lay idle while we're waiting for an extended period.
We'll talk with you again next week.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks much.
Bye-bye.
Peter Levitt is an agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the agricultural markets on the pre-opening commodity market report with your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, and that you can sign up for our weekend newsletter along with hearing all or most of the ag programming right there on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.